This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who enjoys the story behind the book. Coming to you from the Tantalk Radio Studio Network right here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Check out my website. I'm going to try to get all of my archives up this week because after that Hurricane Irma, we got a little bit delayed here, but I'm working hard on it. And my website is radio-joyonpaper.com, and I will have, I hope, all of my archives up to date pretty soon. Now, I'm so happy to welcome today someone who's written a really fascinating book, and I'm thrilled that she is calling all the way from, where are you?
Good morning, I'm Patsy. I'm in London.
Okay, England. In London, that's great. Well, my guest is Selina Siak. Did I pronounce that right?
That's great, yes.
Selina Siak Chin Yoke. And the name of the book is When the Future Comes Too Soon. And I'm holding up, because we have a camera here, I'm holding up the cover. It is a beautiful, beautiful cover.
My publisher will be delighted to hear that.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And, of course, the cover for your previous book, The Woman Who Breathed Two Worlds, was also beautiful. Now, that book was selected. I know it was a Goodreads favorite. It was one of the best books selected for one of the best, I don't remember which month, but it was really a great book. And now this is the second book. The new book is When the Future Comes Too Soon, is the second in this series of books that you're writing about Malaya, right?
That's correct. And it's now called Malaysia, of course, but it was formerly a British colony.
But, of course, in the book we call it Malaya, and it's Malaysia now. And the fascinating thing is it's so relevant, the story today, because it really fills in what people don't know about that area of the world and don't remember. And you have really gone back, taken a step back into history, which it's so important that we learn from history. So tell us where the idea for the book came from and how you've gone about it, because you've done a beautiful job.
Oh, thank you, Patsy. I'm very glad you said what you said, because even though the setting is possibly unfamiliar to people, the themes that my books explore, I think, are all very relevant. So the second book explores betrayal and love and survival. And, you know, we all know about that. And it features a female protagonist who has been told many times in her life that she's either not good enough or lesser than in some way. And then in a very difficult time in her life, she actually discovers that she has resilience she didn't know she had. Now, I was not always a writer, as you hint at, and I started writing in 2010 when I was recovering from breast cancer. In fact, I was in a depression, except I didn't know it. And I saw a counselor because I don't have a personality that lends itself to depression. I had no idea what was going on. I just knew something wasn't right. And the counselor suggested that I do something artistic because she said, many people who were in my position, she had found, actually regained their lives through pottery or painting or, you know, singing even. And I remembered that I had been pretty good at writing at school, even though I didn't pursue it seriously. And so out of desperation, I started a short story. And I was fortunate because I have a friend in London who worked at the time as a developmental editor, Natalie Teitler, and she saw my story and encouraged me to continue because there was something in it that touched her. And so I did, and I soon remembered a dream that I'd had as a child of writing a novel loosely based around my great-grandmother's life, and that basically became The Woman Who Breathed Two Worlds, because she was mixed of mixed heritage. She was both half Chinese and half Malay. It's a story that explores food, family, and cultural identity. And I can tell you there's nothing like food to actually help you regain your health.
And you do write about it so well, because when you're writing about the food, we can almost smell the garlic.
I'm glad to hear that. Some readers have actually said, please don't read when you're hungry.
I'm one of those. I'm like a method actor. I'm a method reader. So whenever there's food in a book, I want to eat that food. So it's funny.
Some of the items, the ingredients, are not easily available in the West. So people would have to be quite inventive, you know, or omit ingredients. But by and large, it is very spicy, very colorful food, yes.
Now, so it's based on your maternal grandmother, right? Did you say?
My great-grandmother, the first novel,
the
yes.
First one. And
I never met her, I might add.
And, you know, all of these stories, so many of the stories, of course, there's that book starts earlier, and the new book starts in 1941.
41, yes.
Yeah, and I love the opening because I had never thought about, I had never, the on the first page, I had never thought about how people would think of a bomb falling from a plane if they had never seen one. I mean, you know, we're all so used to the visual of it, but it was very, very well written, that beginning, because I thought, wow, this is, you know, really eye-opening in many ways.
Yeah, one of the reasons I wrote it, apart from wanting to show the diversity, sorry, is there noise on the line?
No, we're okay here. We don't.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I wanted, apart from showing the diversity of women's experiences and to show that actually despite perceived cultural differences and differences in era, we share more than we think. You know, our experiences have been more similar than we actually think on first sight. But apart from that, I wanted to also explore and show readers what it was like in what the Second World War was like in Asia, because I think most people are more familiar with the war in Europe, say, than what happened in Asia. And Malaysia in particular was always so peaceful that actually people had never, well, they sort of knew what a bomb was. But I think that knowing what it is and then experiencing it, you know, I gave a talk recently in New York to an audience, and one member said precisely what you said, you know, I mean, how can you not know what a bomb is, almost? And then she remembered what it was like in 9/11. And knowing is one thing, but when it's actually within your midst, I think that was what was a complete shock to everybody. They had seen war movies vaguely. I mean, that was still quite new then. And, you know, to have suddenly these things dropping that caused the earth to shake. You know, we don't really have earthquakes in Malaysia either. So all of it was new. And then, you know, to see blood on the streets was quite chilling.
Well, you really do evoke the period and make the reader feel that they are right there with the protagonist. And tell us about the protagonist, because, you know, she's a very fascinating character, because she, you know, with women, you know, so often women find themselves in difficult situations in life, and it's always how they deal with it. Now, I know your writing has been compared to, for example, Pearl S. Buck, and it's true, because she also has women who are facing, you know, problems, and then they rise to the needs of solving the problems and taking care of their families. And so when I was a child, I read every Pearl S. Buck book, which is, I think, is, you know, unfortunately, she's not read very often today, but because of that, I had no problem whatsoever with the names in your book. Now, some people might say, oh, well, they're, you know, they're names that we're not familiar with. But after a while, once you start reading, I think any reader will, you know, find themselves right into the book. And so tell us more about this, you know, the protagonist and why, you know, her name, of course, is Mei Feng. And tell us more about her.
Mei Feng means beautiful wind in Chinese. And she, first of all, I need to say that she's not like me at all, okay? So to actually write her, I had to really imagine what it would have been like for a woman of her generation who was educated but didn't go to college because at the time she wasn't allowed to. It was thought that she would be better off being married. And she was intelligent, but didn't have the opportunities that you and I would have had, for instance. So she was, on the one hand, tempted by an easier life, but on the other hand, also frustrated by it. And then the war comes, and she discovers that she actually, it's up to her to fend for the family. And it's all a shock because, yes, she'd worked in the past, but she didn't think that she was capable of really supporting her entire family. And in those days, people had at least a few children. So she has four or five, even at the start of the book. And so she suddenly finds herself in this position that, you know, she had never dreamt she would be in, because the war actually came quite suddenly to Malaya. People had been talking about it for a few years because the rest of Asia had been at war. So on the one hand, it wasn't wholly unexpected, but when it happened, it took everyone by surprise, and then they had to do what they could to survive. And this is what happens to her. And through that, she finds her voice, and she actually matures as a person. So it is a story about her family and survival, and also betrayal in its many different forms, and the tenuousness of love in extreme circumstances.
Now, of course, as you say, she's not at all like you, because you are really sort of a high-powered investment banker and trader, and also, right, you were a theoretical physicist? Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. Those are all past lives. I don't do any of that anymore.
But
it's not so much what she didn't do. It's more the personality. You know, she lacked confidence. I don't think anyone would say that I lack confidence. So, you know, we differ a lot from that. But on the other hand, you know, I had opportunities that she never had.
And so when you came to this, and as you said, you had to sort of get into her mind, but also there's quite a bit of research that you had to do for this period of time.
There was, although as a Malaysian of my generation, I actually grew up hearing a lot of things about the Japanese occupation. So I should take a step back now and say that the country was, which had been a British colony, was occupied by the Japanese army for 3.5 years. And this is when the future comes too soon takes place. And yes, I did have to do some research, but I grew up hearing stories about what happened in the course of the occupation, how people were frightened. So when I went back, I did do research by talking to people, because that's my writing process is really, I have to anchor the story around events. So I know what the main events are that take place, both historically and actually within the family as well. And then I mold the characters around the events. So the characters are quite fluid, you know, how they react to different events sort of changes. And sometimes the characters start doing things that I never intended. But in terms of the events themselves, I had to go and talk to people who lived through the experience. And I did this a few years ago, so the research, and people still remembered their fear and how they didn't have enough to eat. And in particular, how there was no rice, because rice is a staple in the Far East. And everybody remembered how, because they didn't have enough rice, you know, they had to grow tapioca and sweet potatoes. And about the purification parades that took place, so everyone mentioned that, and how, you know, Ipoh, my hometown, which is where the story is set, is a beautiful town surrounded by limestone hills. And before the Japanese occupation, no one really thought very much about locking their doors. It was very peaceful. And suddenly you had this occupying force. Everybody started locking, not only locking their doors, but every time there was a knock on the door, it became terrifying. You know, you were afraid of actually unlocking it in case there were soldiers outside who wanted to come in and do whatever they wanted to do. You know, it, and it varied. They would either drag men out or drag the women out. But I hasten to add that the book is not actually gory. Although it does take the reader right into the world of the occupation.
Well, and as you said, it's not gory, so it's not blood and guts kind of a wartime story. It is a very emotional story, and you really do. Your characters have interesting personalities, and as you said, they do sort of. There are sometimes, you know, interesting surprises, and even the ending, I think, will people, you know, are surprised by the ending. We won't give it away, but I think, you know, you've just developed a really great story here.
Well, thank you. And, you know, you're either going to love the ending or hate it, so that's all I can say.
Yeah, well, I love that. Well, I like when there's sort of a I like twists in a book, and you have some in there. And of course, as I said, the development of the character, the husband, is fascinating. And you really bring his sort of character to the forefront. I thought that you did that beautifully.
Well, thank you.
And you know, when people talk about, you know, changing their lives from, you're doing one thing in life, and then recently, well, just last week, Lee Child was on, and he was talking about how, you know, he was a very successful television producer in England, in Birmingham, and with Granada TV, and very successful. He thought that was his entire life, and then he was 39 years old, and he was fired, and that was it, and he had no job, at the time, nobody was hiring, and he had to say, okay, I have to, you know, take care of my family. I have to do something. And so he wrote a book, and that's how we got Jack Reacher. But it's things, life sort of sometimes, you know, turns your life around in fascinating ways, and that you know, were able to start writing, I think, is, well, you were a good reader. You had been reading all your life?
Yes, I have. And I used to read everything I could get my hands on. And I think, in a funny way, the different jobs that I had, even though they sound very different, what I like to say, Patsy, is that writing is my fourth career, but the first one everyone understands. Because, you know, when theoretical physics made people think of mathematics and they couldn't do it, and investment banking at the time, in England, nobody knew what it was. And then the third career was quantitative trading, which, again, you know, is highly numerate and made everyone shudder. But they all have one thing in common, which is that you have to be very disciplined to be any good at it. And I think it's the same with writing. So on the one hand, it sounds very different, but I've taken some of my past experience into it in the form of discipline. And yes, I did read a huge amount, and I still do. And that's, you know, a lot of people ask me, what tips would you give me or what advice as a writer? And I think I would say read tons and also take risks with your writing, which is, again, easier for me to say because I'm used to that, you know, in my previous life, because you have to pretty much take risks in some way. But I think the only way that I found my writing voice was actually by experimenting and taking some risks. And in some ways, the series that I've written, the two books I've written, are very different. And in, you know, that is a risk. It was a risk. I realized it was a risk, but I'm glad I took it because they had to be different. And each book can be read independently, as I think you found for yourself. And so because they have different protagonists and they're set in a different time and they have different themes, you know, they can't be the same as, say, a crime series.
And as you said, the first book, I wanted to just double check with you because it's called The Woman Who Breathed Two Worlds. And am I pronouncing the main character's name correctly? Chia?
Chai Hoon.
Chai. So it should be Chai.
Chai Hoon. Yeah, I just want to make you know, you touched on this earlier, Patsy. Yeah, the names are a little bit different, okay, because they are Asian names. And, you know, I haven't made it, I haven't diluted it for the Western reader. I understand that. And I did actually, in fact, have character lists, which my publisher didn't think was a good idea to put in because they thought it would give they would give too much away. But as you say, once you get into the story itself, you know, the fact that the names look unfamiliar or the setting is unfamiliar is sort of irrelevant. At least some, you know, most readers say that in their reviews because you're drawn into the story and the themes. And the situations are things everybody recognizes in some way or form. So yes, her name is Chai Hoon, and you know, I'm sorry if people find that difficult, but I hope that
no, it's a love.
If you
it's
just
a,
think
it's,
of her as Chai, you know, it'd be easy.
Yeah, it's I love these names, and as to settings, I think one of the wonderful things about both books is that you really get a feeling for a place that you're not familiar with. As you know, most of us don't know anything about Malaysia here. We don't hear about it very often. And I thought the way you described it, it was funny when at one point where you talk about how the cost of coconuts and it's a land of coconuts. And I thought, you know, that was interesting.
Indeed, and in fact, it was a talking point in Malaya at the time. You know, how is it that this is so expensive and there are coconuts everywhere? So that was an evidence of the mismanagement by the Japanese army.
So that's I love books where I learn something that I don't know. I didn't know. You know, whether it doesn't matter what it's about. If a book, if I come away from a book and I've learned something, I know a place a little bit better. I'm familiar with the you know what went on there. This is a win-win for me.
Very glad to hear.
So I thought, you know, that's great. And I, as I said, you know, and it's timely because there is so much talk about, you know, Asia. Today, we're all interested in Asia, partly because of the recent trip of our president here, because I think it's important for readers to sort of place these countries in perspective, you know, to know about the Japanese occupation and what it meant at the time and the relationship today to Japan and China. And of course, Malaysia plays a big part in it. Vietnam, so it's. I think it's a wonderful book to read, as particularly at this time. I think people will find that it's sort of eye-opening.
Well, thank you, and I hope that you know people agree with that because actually, when I was writing it, I realized how similar we are in many ways. You know, how the questions that, for instance, my protagonist in the first book, you know, way back in the early 20th century was asking, were not that different to questions we ask ourselves today. So she was trying to grapple with how to embrace progress and at the same time keep true to her values. And she could see that her values were not going to be passed down to her children. So what was she going to do? You know, those are all questions that we ask ourselves. And in the second book, you know, how strong am I? You know, what do I do if I'm really tested? I mean, that is a question we all deal with at some point. And so that was a learning curve for me, even though I'm a first-generation immigrant.
Now, as you said, this is, although you can read them out of order, are there more books in this? You're going to continue after World War II? What, you're working on your third book?
I knew you were going to ask that, Patsy. Yes, there is a third book. And it will take the reader to closer to modernity. And actually, as we get closer to modernity, the questions become even more, if you say, present, shall we say. So the third book will be about loss, love, and awakening. And in particular, it will explore the question of how do we, peoples of different races, religions, and beliefs, live together in one umbrella. And Malaysia is a natural setting for that because it is so diverse and so multicultural. And that's something that Malaysia is still grappling with today.
And, you know, when we're talking about Malaysia, as you said, it's very complex and a very important country that most people don't know anything about. And it really does have a great importance in sort of the world events.
It is, I think, important precisely for that reason, because if we cannot get it right in Malaysia, I think there will be consequences, not just for Malaysians, but for other multicultural countries, which is why, partly why I was motivated to tell the story of, you know, not just the family, but also of Malaysia. I didn't start off thinking I would write a series. It was simply that when I was writing about my protagonist in the first book, I realized I was telling not just the story of her family, but also the story of her country, which became Malaysia.
Now, you have a website that you want people to go to, or how do
you? It is siapchinyok.com, which I can probably send you the link.
Okay. Well, when I put this up on my website, when I put this interview up on my website, I'll put a link there for people because they can learn more about you and more about Malaysia, as I said, because it is an important subject and one that I think they'll find fascinating. I as I said, the names, once you start reading this book, which is, as I said, the cover is so beautiful, When the Future Comes Too Soon, and I think that people will really enjoy it.
Thank you very much, Patsy, for having me.
Well, Selena, I just want to thank you so much for being on the program today. As I said, I hope that you'll come back when the third book is out. So you're now finding a great deal of joy in writing.
And peace, yes. And I really do love it.
Well, that's wonderful because, you know, life, you know, sends us in different directions. And it's wonderful that you found an outlet for your creative. And this is actually very true that one really needs to have always one artistic endeavor because it does work that mind, you both sides of your brain, and keeps you alert. And so I think that you've done a brilliant job in writing these two books, and I hope that you'll come back when the third one is out. And I want to thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today.
It's been a pleasure. I look forward to speaking to you again.
Okay, thank you. And the book is When the Future Comes Too Soon by Selena Siapchinyok. And bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Well, that's fascinating. She was in London. She had been traveling, and I was really so happy that I was able to get her today. As I said, the book is very interesting, and her protagonist, wow, this woman goes through a lot and learns a lot along the way, and 3.5 years of occupation, Japanese occupation, was, whoa. What these people went through. So it's a fascinating story, and I hope that you will get the book. And I'm going to take, what we're going to do, we're going to have a book buzz. We didn't have a book buzz for a few days because I had Mary Higgins Clark on, and I couldn't interrupt her. And then, of course, Lee Child, who was so, so wonderful and gave me the whole hour. But I want to catch up with a book buzz, and we have one from Rita Murrow, right?
The next book I'd like to talk about deals with a lot of the issues.
Oh, wait. We want Rita's book buzz. Okay. While Big Ed is looking for Rita Murrow's most recent book buzz, we will... Okay, I think Big Ed has it in the control room. Are you set, Ed? Okay, he's not in his head. Let's...
This is Rita Murrow reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on Book Buzz. Hey, have you ever asked yourself whose funeral will be next? Probably not, but Grave Errors, a Witch City Mystery by author Carol J. Perry might have you asking that question. Here's the buzz. For residents of Salem, Massachusetts, the day after Halloween brings empty candy wrappers, sagging pumpkins, and a community-wide identity crisis. That is until Lee Barrett's TV production class suggests extending the spooky season. But when the students discover not all of Salem's dead are resting in peace, the post-October blues don't seem so bad after all. As if a series of haunting graveyard visits isn't disturbing enough, Lee and her policeman boyfriend connect the crime to an unsolved missing person case. Driven by a series of chilling psychic visions, Lee calls on her cleverest allies, including her shrewd cat, Orion, to go underground and dig up the evidence needed to put a lid on a cold case forever, before the town's latest headstone has her name on it. Carol J. Perry's Grave Errors is an entertaining story that keeps readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. This is Rita Murrow, reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Murrow, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I was thinking about Asia, Malaysia, Japan, China. This weekend, of course, was Veterans Day, and the president was in Vietnam, and one of the most touching press conferences was the one that he did with some American veterans who were visiting Vietnam, and they got together and they met with the president, and he was very gracious in his thanking them for their service. And it was very beautiful when several of them spoke, and they talked about what it meant for them to go back after so many years to Vietnam. And, you know, they reminded everyone that we lost 58,000 people, 58,000, mostly young men and a few women who were mostly in those days nurses, who died in that conflict. And that these men now have gone back to see the country, which has changed so much and is emerging as a major commercial company that, of course, if you look at your underwear and your socks and so much of the things that we now wear are made in Vietnam. It's a interesting phenomenon. And it reminded me of a book that I very much enjoy reading. I've read it twice now, and it is called Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, How I Survived Vietnam and Kept My Sense of Humor. And it is written by J.S. Lamb. It is available on Amazon as a Kindle book. And it's a wonderful little book where J.S. Lamb is Jim Lamb. And he writes there the stories that he told his family over the years. And he manages to find humor among all of the craziness that was going on there. And that, I think, it probably kept him sane. And that's always a great thing. And so it's called Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. It's available on Amazon. And I hope that Jim's going to come on the program again soon, so that he was here once and he's going to come back. And he's going to tell us some of these stories of what life was like for him in the military. And it was good that he found some things to laugh at, because it was not a pleasant time for anyone, but it was good to keep your sense of humor. So I'm looking forward to having Jim coming back on the program. But meanwhile, it's available on Amazon as a Kindle version. It's just $5, and it's well worth the price. Just, you know, whenever you can have a good laugh, it's wonderful. So check it out. It's called Orange Socks and Colorful Tales. Which reminds me, you know, there has been over the years, now this book is Kindle. It's not a big book, and it's easy to read, and I think you will enjoy it. But I was thinking about reading in general, and I've been looking at some of these recent studies. And, you know, I always tell you it's important to read. And that's why I'm doing this program, so that you will read a book. And it is amazing. I don't know if you have ever volunteered in a senior's home or a retirement village or any you know, hospital where there are older patients. And you will find that the ones who are doing well, the ones who are thriving, are the ones who have managed to keep their mind active. And one of the ways to do so is by reading. And it's just it's an amazing thing when you meet an older person who's very, very into reading books. Their mind is active. They keep alert. And they've discovered that people who read are much less likely to get Alzheimer's disease. Again, we don't know the entire process, but it's sort of like Hercule Poirot always said, using your gray cells. And one of my son's teachers, Dr. Harmon Hockman, who was a great violinist here in the Tampa Bay region, he would always say that the most important thing was to keep your mind active. One of his ways was learning dates. If you learn the date of an event, it just works in two ways, because your mind, our mind is a really quite miraculous. And when you, as I said, with the guest I had in the earlier hour, Selena Yoke, she was a physicist. Now she had, of course, a mind, that part of her mind that was very into numbers. But then when it came at a point in her life where she was ill, she, you know, had some very serious problems, and she needed to do something to keep her going, to keep give her some interest in life. And she discovered that by writing, she was a different person. And this is what is so important. So if you're under stress, they discovered that just like 2.5 minutes of reading can reduce your stress level by 60%. That it's really quite amazing. So just take some time and read a book. I suppose, you know, and read a book and, of course, do other things too. Do some artistic things like origami, crocheting. And, you know, in the we used to see older men would be whittling. And this is an artistic endeavor. And it's, again, something that keeps your mind active. But you can certainly do it with reading. And the best thing, of course, although I love Kindle books because they're convenient and I can go through books faster that way, especially for me because I read so very much now. But I have this wonderful ability, and I think most people, your mind works in a very specific way when you are reading a physical book. I know that I can think about a book that I've read years ago or a subject that I've read about years ago, and I can often remember exactly which side of the page that I read this. So I can say it's going to be on the left-hand side of the page, and this is like 30 years later. So it's always fascinating how our mind works, that the visuals of a book page, if you think about it, when you read a book, you're reading every page, and that visual is there somewhere in your brain. Now, most of us cannot, you know, we don't have photographic memory, so we can't draw it up, but it's there somewhere, and it's just partly through practice, partly through years of reading, that it just helps your mind. And when they say that it really, they've discovered that people with Alzheimer's are not the ones who have read as much as people without Alzheimer's. It's fascinating. So, you know, pick up a book and read it. And there's always some book that there's something that must interest you. And again, it's the same thing. It's not television. Television doesn't stimulate the mind in the way that a book does. There's something about the nature of mankind that we've learned to associate letters with words and the words with pages in a book, and they just develop your mind. So I just hope that all of you will just pick up a book, as I said, 2.5 minutes a day. I mean, just to reduce your stress level by 60-65% is amazing. And certainly you can read more than 2.5 minutes a day. Now, I was going to do a little break. Well, you know, I'm going to think about it. I want to talk about something which I found fascinating. I mean, I have told all of you when I'm asked all the time, and you can send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will answer your questions about literary agents, about books that you should read, about all sorts of ideas. But one of the things that it's just sort of blown my mind today is because I do read Publishers Weekly, and I want to tell all of you that if you are looking for an agent, I know that they sell all of these books, agents A to Z, but I really, really recommend that you read Publishers Weekly instead. It's nice to sort of see this list of agents, but in most cases, by the time you get the book with a list of agents, one-third of those agents aren't agents anymore. Either they've gone on to something else, they've gone on to be college professors, or they've gone on to some other business. And So it's almost a waste of time and energy. The best way to find an agent is to look in Publishers Weekly and look under the news section where it's called New Releases. And there you will find the names of the agents who are active. And these are the ones that are getting the deals. So, of course, those are the agents that you want. And I was reading this one story today that really caught my eye because it's quite amazing. The agent's name is Grayen Fox, and she spells it G-R-A-I-N-N-E, which I never seen that spelling before, but Grayen Fox. And she's with Fletcher & Company. Fletcher & Company is really one of the premier literary agents in the world. And they are situated on 78th Fifth Avenue. I think that's such a nice address, 78th Fifth Avenue. Anyway, Miss Fox has gotten a deal, seven-figure deal, for Sarah Pineborough's new book. Now, I don't know if you've read Sarah Pineborough's new book or her last book, which is called Behind Her Eyes. It's a best-selling book. I think she sold 100,000 books like in 6 months here in the United States. So there, Grayen Fox at Fletcher & Company was able to secure a seven-figure deal. Wow, that's pretty impressive. And if you're looking for an agent, you want one who is active. And obviously, Miss Fox is very active. And so the name of the company is Fletcher & Company on 78th Fifth Avenue. You can go to their website, Fletcher & Company, and find out what their submission requirements are. Whoa, I think that that's pretty amazing when you get a seven-figure deal. And, you know, all you have to do is try. But now I also want to remind all of you that if you are the kind who really gets scared about writing a query letter, of course, for Fletcher & Company, you better have a really great query letter. But if you are sort of a little bit hesitant about query letters and a little bit worried, remember that Regina Brooks has this month of November, she is taking submissions for her YA contest. And it is a wonderful opportunity because she does not require a query letter. All you have to do is send in the first 250 words. And, you know, you sometimes people will say, well, that's not a lot. But, you know, agents who have read over and over and millions and zillions of books, they really can tell in 250 words if you have talent. An example is this Selena Yoke's book that I just read. As I mentioned, the opening just caught my attention. I mean, I had never thought of it, of a bomb dropping from an airplane as something that you wouldn't even know what it is. And so it's the way she did her opening page, I can see why immediately an agent would say, okay, this woman can write. And so go to Regina Brooks. It's called her agency is called Serendipity. And the website is serendipitylit.com. And you can submit 250 words. There are going to be five winners to this YA contest. So if you've written a young adult book, why not try? It costs $15 to submit it. So this is, you know, nothing. So it's really a wonderful opportunity for all of you YA writers. And while you're at it, if you're, you know, still thinking about another agent, remember always that Barbara Powell at Irene Goodman is also one of the most active agents out there, and she is always, I think every other week I read about one of her deals, also again in Publishers Weekly, and it is well worth checking it out and getting a subscription to Publishers Weekly, so you can you don't need a subscription to see the news, but to read the stories in there and become familiar with the publishing world, because it is not an easy thing to sell a book. And for all of you out there, I know that over the next few months, I'm going to have quite a few people who are going to help you with ideas on some new ideas on how to reach readers, because it is a difficult thing, and it is important that you sort of learn always the latest techniques. First it was Facebook, then it was Twitter, then Instagram, and there's always something new coming up and some new ideas on how to reach readers. And meanwhile, as Selena Yoke said, the most important thing for all writers is all writers have to be good readers. So that means you have to get out there and read and read and read, because it does also go somewhere in that brain of ours. We have all of these pages of books that we've read. And when you are writing something, you know, you can call upon all of this vast knowledge that you have because you've been a good reader. So make sure that you read a book today. And if you need any ideas, go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com. I always have good ideas there for you to read about and listen to the archives. I'm going to have, as I said, I'm catching up finally after this hurricane, which set me back a month, I think, in my archives. But you can listen to Lee Child and Mary Higgins Clark and all sorts of wonderful authors that I've been blessed by being able to talk to. So it's just a wonderful thing when you read. And of course, remember, one of the most wonderful things in this world is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book nowadays, because that is really exciting, or to hear them spoken on stage or screen like Lee Child. My goodness, although he actually doesn't like the movies of Jack Reacher, but what the heck, he made a lot of money from it. So I guess he can overcome his reluctance to see Jack Reacher played by somebody who's much shorter than his character. But what the heck, it's fun. And so, you know, just find your joy and share it and make sure that you say something nice to somebody. It's coming up to Thanksgiving. And get the Book of Joy to share with everybody at the Thanksgiving table. You will really have a lot of fun sharing that book with everybody. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thanks, Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. We have to start wearing hats, official hats and medals. Okay, bye-bye now. Oh, Thursday, David Baldacci. My goodness, my goodness. Make sure you're here. Okay, bye-bye.